Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, welcome to Writer's Routine. This is the show that takes you behind the scenes of an author's day to simply see how they get their work done. Now today we've got a double header because both co-writers of a brand new book are on the show. Eve Mackis and Anthony Cropper are friends, they're authors and colleagues. They're both creative writing teachers at the same university. Now they've worked on something that's a little bit different, which we're hearing about on the show today. It's called The Accidental Memoir, and it's a kind of self-help book to prompt you to write your own memoir. Now we talk about the tight times that they set themselves to get to work each day. Also how it all started as an incredibly thoughtful, by the way, incredibly thoughtful Christmas present. And how all the knowledge of teaching creative writing for a few years helped them to be in the best place to slightly mould the way that you tell your story.
One thing I always do at the beginning is get the people to tell a true story, and they'll tell me a story, they'll write down a story which is filled with fantastic quality material. It's specific, it's got detail, it draws on the senses, it's got a point to it, something always happens, it's got this three-act structure of the beginning, middle and end. People naturally can do that and can write at a very high level. And what I say to them then is, make sure you transfer all of that across to your stories. And what happens generally is, as soon as we go to the next exercise and they write a story, all of that rich detail disappears. So people need to just remember to make the fiction as believable and as honest and as accurate as the stories that they've lived.
There's all that and more on this week's Writer's Routine. Yes, hello, thanks so much for giving us a listen. My name is Dan Simpson and this is Writer's Routine. Oh, and it's hot outside at the moment, isn't it? I'm in the front room in my flat and I've got all the curtains pulled, all the windows and doors shut to keep out the noise when I record this. But it also means it is hotter in here than the sun. So if I suddenly go silent, probably send for help if you can. Now, if you're brand new to the show, if this is your first listen and perhaps you're struggling with your work, stick around. I promise you will hear some advice in this chat that will help you with your creativity. If you've been around and listened to this show many times before, well, do me a favour, just take a few seconds of your day and drop us a quick review on the iTunes podcast store. Get on there, it takes just a couple of seconds, search for Writer's Routine and let other people know what you think. It helps them out with their work and it helps us out with the iTunes podcast store so we can get a wide range of authors that want to come and be on the show. It would be amazing if you could just take a few seconds of your day and do that for us. Now today on the show, something like a little bit different in that, well, it's not a novel, it's not a biography, it's not a polemic, it's a guide really. And we've not had a guide like this on the show ever. We're talking about The Accidental Memoir with its writers Eve Mackis and Anthony Cropper. Now, it all started as a Christmas present from Eve to her dad. And along with Anthony, they used all their knowledge of teaching creative writing to jot down a series of prompts in a notebook to get him to tell the story of his life. So perhaps he could write down all the things that he just couldn't express out loud with words. They wrote a book to try and prize open a closed book. And when it went well, they took the idea to a publisher, and here it is in front of me. It's full of prompts and tips to get writing because they both work together as creative writing lecturers at the same university. So they know how to get straight to the point and extract something from anyone, really. It's a great book to have around as well. It sounds really strange, but you know those books that you just love to have and to hold? It's one of those. It's just a beautiful work of art, really. Now, we talk about the different incarnations of the book and how they made it as tight as it can be in the third draft, the one that sat in front of me. Also, we find out why they think it does something that other creative writing books simply don't manage. Now, very quickly, before we start, there were some mic issues with this recording. It's very simple. There were three people in the room. I only have two mics. So I sacrificed mine. And what it means is that there's not too much of me asking questions. It's kind of freeform. I think it flows quite nicely. But if you hear a slightly confusing edit, a jarring change of tact and pace in the conversation, I don't think there's too many. But if you do hear something, please push through it. It'll be fine in a few seconds. Now let's get to it then. We start with Eve Mackis and Anthony Cropper, the co-authors of the brand new book, The Accidental Memoir, and we talk about the places that they prefer to get their work done.
I've written in all sorts of places over the last 15 years. Sometimes it's been chaotic and noisy, but I've still managed to write. My youngest son Harry was born, I decided to stay at home, look after him and write as well. And having children, if you've got children, you know what it's like. It's very noisy, it's very chaotic, and I'd still have my computer out, my laptop out all the time on the kitchen table, and I'd try and snatch moments between changing nappies and feeding him and things like that. Other times I couldn't stand to sort of be in that situation. I would want it absolutely silent. So where I am now, I like it really quiet, sometimes a little bit of music on, but mostly very quiet, so I can just sit and concentrate.
I'm thinking in the shower, I'm thinking as I'm washing the plates, I'm thinking as I'm sort of lying in bed. So when I start writing, I'm not writing from cold, I'm writing from having thought about something, having sort of warmed my brain up, if you like. Ideally I'd like to write when it's quiet, but you know, that situation doesn't always exist. So my routine is that I have my laptop open always, so I'll sort of pick my son up from school, back to my desk, cook the dinner, back to my desk. I generally don't watch television, so that's my relaxation, my entertainment is writing.
For me, I'm the same as Eve, really. I write in the middle of the night. I used to have a pad by the side of my bed. Now I just have the phone by the side of the bed, switch that on and just write if ideas come in the day. I'm exactly the same. My laptop is open all the time, 24 hours a day, so I can just drop in at any moment, so I don't have to wait, because ideas just come and spur of the moment. You don't know when a good idea or a bad idea is going to come along, so you just have to be ready to catch it, really, and to write it down.
But if I could just say, it's not always about having an idea and being inspired and you sit. You know, writing is slog as well. So yeah. Once you've got an idea down or you've got a chapter down, you've got to shape the chapter. You've got, you know, there's a whole lot of things you need to do with your writing to get it right or to a point at which you're happy with it. So it's not always about sort of capturing inspiration. That doesn't happen very often. It's about labouring over your work, and you have to keep going back to it.
It's iterative, isn't it? It's just like small stages all the time. When you're working on something big, it might be just a word that you might get in a day, or it might be just an idea to advance the story or to advance the book forward a little bit in terms of words, some positioning of certain words. So as Eve says, it's not necessarily always about the big idea. It's about just staying with it and keeping on and on and on. And just if I could tell you quickly about a writing exercise I do with my different classes, is I get them to describe their perfect writing spot. I'll tell them about my perfect writing spot at the start, and I'll say it's on Mount Elgon overlooking the African plains. I used to live in Africa a long time ago, 20 years ago, in this grand house with wildebeest going past and giraffe, all these animals out the window, and coffee's always on the boil. And it doesn't exist, my perfect writing spot. So I get all the students or the participants to talk about their perfect writing spot, which they've all got these, you know, either on boats or up in mountains or up at the top of an office block or whatever it could be. But they, afterwards, I'd say to them, well, nobody chooses to be in a classroom. Nobody chooses to be at a university in a room with 15 other people, with somebody at the front like me who's telling them to write certain things. So this perfect writing spot doesn't exist, and yet people come into rooms together like that and produce fantastic quality material. So we can produce in any, I think in, not in any circumstance, but in many, many different sort of environments, we can be creative and can work on different ideas. I think it doesn't have to, we don't have to have the perfect spot.
I think how it starts sort of early on in the days is that there's a rapid exchange of messages, text messages, so that we're sort of working out what we're going to do when we meet up, or there's emails, so we're sort of deciding that when we get together we're going to work on this or that, and then we would normally meet at my local library. That was the place where we met to work, and we would sit and have a quite an intensive 3-hour session.
Mm-hmm. We had very specific things we wanted to get through, and I knew I had 3 hours parking on the local car park outside the library as well, so I had no more than that. I got a parking ticket once for being about 5 minutes over or something. So 3 hours, unless if we were really busy, I could go and move it to somewhere else and carry on. But I'd drive down to Nottingham. It's about an hour's drive for me. We'd meet, say, 10 o'clock in the morning. We'd work through till early afternoon, get through as much as we could with the book, just sitting at one of the tables in the library, weren't we?
Yeah.
Making quite a bit of a racket at times, I think,
yeah.
Talking quite intensively with each other about ideas.
Yeah, I think with the nature of this project, it allowed us to work together. I don't think you can work on a novel in the same way. You can't work on a novel the same way. What we did, there was a lot of brainstorming, so it was a lot of back and forth. Should we put this in? Would this work? Let's try this. How about this? And I think we have probably a very similar or the same ethos on the teaching of writing. We sort of believe that everybody can write if they're given the right prompt. With a little bit of gentle encouragement, I think everybody can write, and that's what the book's about. So we'd sort of decide on a prompt, we decide on the literary reference, because at the foot of each page there's a literary reference, an extract that goes with the prompt, so it's a little bit more inspiration. So we'd decide on those. We'd neither of us have sort of we're not big egos, we're not precious about our work, so we're willing to accept the other person's opinion if it's the right one. And we'd sort of quickly decide what was right and how we would, what we'd include, what we wouldn't include, how we'd phrase the prompts. A lot of work went into it, but we just wanted to get it just right, didn't we? The tone of the book.
We wanted
a particular tone.
It went through various forms as well, though. From when it first started, we can talk about the original idea in a sec, but this version is version number 3, I think, isn't it? We had other versions which had more explanations, more descriptions of the prompts, some of our own stories in there as well, to try and help people come up with ideas. But in the end, we sort of stripped it back as much as we could, because we've both been teaching creative writing for 10, 15, 20 years between, a long, long time. So we stripped it back as much as we could, because we know that people don't often go out and buy or read textbooks on creative writing.
Yeah, we wanted to find a book that would straddle the... most people wouldn't go and buy a creative writing textbook that's in the creative writing section of a bookshop, for example. On the other side are the sort of more standard journals with very, very basic prompts. So we wanted to take the middle road. We wanted to produce a book that had both substance, that was easily accessible, easy to use, but sort of boiled down the secrets of writing, really, and made them accessible for everyone.
Again, we've stripped it down to the basics, to what we think are the most important nuggets of information that students need to know, or practitioners of writing need to know about. So we've included those, but mainly it's a practical book where people will learn by doing. You'd learn by sitting down and trying some writing and try to work out what's right and what's wrong with it.
I would normally type it up. I'd sort of keep a file of all our ideas and how they were developing, and we would bat ideas back and forward. We would sort of quickly rule things out. We'd write something and then we'd shape it, we'd edit it. I think we spent quite a few hours arguing about hyphens, how many we should use, sort of how they should look. Anthony doesn't like hyphens, I don't mind them. So there were things like that. There were
minor things that we... That was in the latter stages,
though,
wasn't it?
That was in the latter stages.
When we were editing.
But, I mean, that's sort of an example of what we'd do. We'd write something and then we'd edit it. And then we'd move on to the next thing and we'd edit that. And then when we came to the whole thing, we'd have to edit it again. And there was constantly to-ing and fro-ing of ideas. And then even after the meetings, immediately after we'd send messages.
Just as he said, it wasn't the 3 hours. I'd be working beforehand, I'd be working in the night. After we'd met, I'd be driving back home, and I'd keep pulling over to the side of the road to text and say, I think we should do it this way, or I think this would be a good idea. Maybe we should add this in. So it'd be extra information, which is still flying around in my head. Even when I got back home, it's an hour's drive. I'd get back home, get on my laptop, and we'd be emailing each other saying, well, we could, what about doing it this way or that way, or including a prompt about this idea. So it was non-stop working, really. Yeah. For probably about 6 months at least, I think, on the book.
And I'd add it to the file, so I'd keep the file, I'd keep adding, and eventually, you know, we finished the book. Well, I was looking for a present for my father, and I wanted the present to do lots of things. I wanted it to be something that was personal from me, something that was uniquely from me. I wanted to cheer him up because he's on the cusp of 80 and he was feeling a bit low. I wanted to give him something he could interact with after Christmas. And also I wanted to capture his stories. The idea came in a flash. I thought, why don't I get a cheap notepad, fill it with life writing prompts. It's something that I know about, and that way get him to share his stories and also to communicate, because he's not a big communicator. He doesn't sort of share his emotions. And the first person I asked was my husband, who said, it's a great idea, go and do it. And then I rang Anthony, but I think before I rang Anthony, I thought, who wouldn't want a book like that? Who wouldn't want a book to give to either a friend or a relative, a parent, a young person or an old person, you know, as a place for people to collect their stories, record their memories?
That was great. I was just sitting at my desk, staring out of the back garden and ignoring the mess. And the phone went and Eve was saying, I've got a great idea. She told me about the idea about this notebook filled with writing prompts that she wanted to give to her father. So we talked it through and she was saying, would you like to be involved? And of course I would like to be involved. It's a fantastic idea, I think. So we just talked through the initial idea of what she might include in terms of the prompts for her father for Christmas. And then,
well, I gave the book to my dad and I left it about a month, and he came back and he'd written in it, and he'd written things that I didn't know. He'd written rhyming couplets, he'd written about his emotions, and this is a man who's never written, who doesn't consider himself a writer, who worked in a fish and chip shop for 50 years of his life, and he was writing quite emotive stuff, very, very special stories. And I think that writing, my father's writing, was our green light to take the project further.
Yeah, and just to fast forward just till last week, actually, his father read at the launch what he'd produced, quite a number of snippets of writing, and what we did was take those snippets, remove the prompts, and just put it together. So it formed the opening of a memoir. It started with his name, then went on to where he lived, then went on to a memory of his missing brother, and then came back to his name, I think, the snippets that had been stitched together. And it was really strong, him standing up. He's never read before in public. I don't think he's ever talked like that in front of people before.
He's never read in public.
I think he really enjoyed it as well, didn't he?
I think he really did enjoy it. I've got a snippet here if you want me to read it.
Please.
In response to this particular prompt in the book, is there someone you miss? A parent, close friend, or sibling? What reminds you of them? When's the last time you saw them? What do you miss? So this is what my father wrote. The one and only person I miss is my brother, Andreas. He was always there when needed and ready to give advice. He was kind and thoughtful and would do anything for anybody, even strangers. I saw him last in 1974, just before he was captured in the Cyprus invasion. And then I saw him dead at a place in Nicosia where they kept all the missing person's remains. It was ironic, but it felt like he was there in person. I felt a shudder going through my body. I felt he was going to talk to me. So it's quite a sort of a emotional, personal family story. And for me, it showed that with the right prompt, you can unearth a very sort of powerful story, using words like ironic, which he wouldn't normally use, and expressing his feelings, you know, saying a shudder had gone through his body. And I knew about this experience that he'd had, but I didn't know how he felt about it. And I wouldn't have known had it not been for the book.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Now, very quickly, before we get back to today's chat, I want to quickly remind you of all the ways that you can get in touch with the show. The best and easiest of those is probably on Twitter. You can find us and give us a follow. We are at WritersPod on there. And it's absolutely the best place if you want a quick reply and a retweet for any praise that you happen to send out my way. Also, we're on Instagram, Writers Routine there. And you can get quotes from all of the authors pretty much every day to give you motivation to get through your work. And you can find us on our website. You can get all the ways to listen to the shows. You can catch any of the episodes you may have missed so far. And there's also a really easy form that you can fill out if you want to get in touch with us. That is over at writersroutine.com. Right, let's get back to it then. Our chat with Eve Mackis and Anthony Cropper. We're chatting about how they worked together for 3 hours every single day to write their brand new book, The Accidental Memoir. Now, it's not a novel. It's not so much standard non-fiction either. It's a guidebook, and it's full of prompts and tips to help you write your own life story. Now, in the second half, we chat about how writers learn by doing and reading more than analysing. Also, how they managed to whittle down the text and they thought about every single word that they wrote. And we pick things up with a conversation about what this book actually does. Like, why do they think it helps someone get their ideas and their stories down in a much better way than other creative writing help books that are out there? What's their secret?
I think it's the way in which we phrase the prompts. The prompts are very leading in a very gentle way. So, you know, another book perhaps would have, you know, who do you miss? You know, we're asking, who do you miss? Why do you miss them? You know, what is it that you miss about them? So all of the prompts are phrased in that way, in a very sort of gentle way, but in a way that jogs people's memories. And there is writing advice in the book, but it's offered in a very sort of unthreatening way. We've got advice about using your senses when you write. We've got words in the book that are sensory words. What the book tries to do is tries to teach writing in an inadvertent way. And I think that's the power of the book.
Plus, we didn't think it would be appropriate in terms of, for this book, having sections on character and plot and structure and things like that. That's for another book, we think. This one was really focusing on people's life stories and their own experiences and getting them to draw upon them, because they're the things, whenever again, relating it back to a creative writing class, one thing I always do at the beginning is get the people to tell a true story, talk about a journey you've been on. for example, and they'll tell me a story, they'll write down a story which is filled with fantastic quality material. It's specific, it's got detail, it draws on the senses, it's got a point to it, something always happens, it's got this three-act structure of the beginning, middle and end. People naturally can do that and can write at a very high level. And what I say to them then is, make sure you transfer all of that across to your stories when you write a story. And what happens generally is, as soon as we go to the next exercise and they write a story, all of that rich detail disappears. So people need to just remember to make the fiction as believable and as honest and as accurate as the stories that they've lived as well. And I think that book, this book helps people do that.
I think the other thing about the book is it has got a tight structure. The idea came in a flash of inspiration, but it was 40 combined years in the making. You know, this book is based on our experience, not only as creative writing teachers, but also I'm a novelist. I've had 4 novels published. I've written a screenplay. Anthony's written plays. He's written a short story collection. He's written novels. And we've both been teaching creative writing for years. So I think it's our combined experience, both as professional writers and as teachers of writing, has, you know, allowed us to write this book relatively quickly in terms of the time it took to write. But actually, it was fermenting for many, many years. You were writing a creative writing book about 15 years ago.
Yeah, we were talking about it before. It was maybe 14, 15 years ago, I contacted Taylor and Francis with an idea for a book on creative writing, similar-ish to this in terms of just being lots and lots of writing prompts. But I had they were interested and said, get back to us with a sample. I just never did because it didn't quite work. It was just a random collection of writing prompts, really.
I think with this book there's a solid concept. Mm. And we shaped the book actually with the help of our agent Diana Beaumont. She the first two, there was too much writing in the first two. So in the first one, for example, we would have a prompt, then we'd have an example of the sort of writing that you should do. So we'd use our own stories, and it became too much about us. So we thought, that's not right. The second one was too much sort of a legacy project. So it would be more for someone who you'd want to capture the stories of someone who was older. And then the third book, where it all sort of fell into place, it was no longer a legacy project. It was a celebration of life. So it could be for anybody. And that's when, you know, we showed it to Diana and she said, yes, this is it. This is, you've just got it right now. It's got the right sort of combination of prompts, literary references and extracts.
Well, it was when we'd managed to apply for the Arts Council grant, we were successful with the Arts Council grant and produced a prototype. I think as well, Diana had only been seeing 3 or 4 or 5 pages, just a sample of it. It's when she saw the whole collection, the ideas together, that she said, yes, this is definitely going to work.
And the other thing that we did was we trialled the exercises. So I trialled them on my students at writing classes. Anthony did the same. So we knew which exercises worked and which didn't. So not all of the exercises made the book, only the ones that we knew or we felt would work best. We were always whittling it down and working on the tone. So we wanted it to be friendly. Mm-hmm.
Playful. Yeah. Engaging.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And educational as well.
Yeah.
I think we as Eve said, we'd look through it, each section over and over again to make sure there's no repetitions, that it flowed in the way we wanted it to, that it sounded in the way we wanted it to. So each, you know, it was like the bigger structure initially of what we're going to include and how we're going to structure it. And then in the final sort of stages, really, just before we went to the initial publication, it was the fine-tuning, which is the sort of latter part of writing a novel as well, as it's the editing, going over and over and over the sentences, the words, to make sure it's as good as we can make it. And for me, as much editing went into this as I would put into writing a short story collection or a novel. It was just that much focus on the words.
There was a ton of editing. You just wouldn't believe how much editing. I mean, even when it was going to publication, we still sort of found things that we needed to change. Editing was a massive part of it. But I think what was really lucky for Anthony and I is that we sort of had the same vision, didn't we? We had the same vision. That's really important. You can't just work with anybody. They've got to sort of share your philosophy. We've got the same philosophy.
Well, I think we both teach creative writing in a similar way. I mean, I know people who would teach it from the basis of looking at people's work, bring the work into the class, and then analysing and critiquing all the students' work or the participants' work. Whereas my approach and Eve's approach to writing is really getting people to learn about writing by doing it,
by
having a writing exercise in the class. So as often as I can, I would say, if we're going to look at your story and look at in particular how you've structured your dialogue and how you've worked your dialogue, I might start the session by getting people to write some dialogue, to add subtext in there, maybe to have people not necessarily responding with silence or changing the subject. So you might look at dialogue in a particular way through an exercise, and then look at someone's story, and people could then look at the dialogue and say, they could say what was right and what was wrong with the dialogue. Whereas if I just told you and acted like a script doctor and just told you what was right and wrong with it, I don't think, and I think Eve's the same as me, feels that people don't necessarily learn. I think you learn by doing something. You learn a deeper understanding by trying what's right and what's wrong.
I think that's at the heart of the philosophy of the book. You learn by doing. You learn by writing more. And this is both for people who don't consider themselves writers, who just want to sort of record their memories, and it's also for people who do write. In fact, I got a message today from a friend of mine who is, she's a writer, she's not had anything published, and she said, one of your prompts has given me an idea for a novel. So she's sort of working her way through the book, and so it can work in that way as well. It can be inspiration for people who do write.
The thing I try and do in all my classes is get people to play, have fun, and be open to ideas, open to new ideas as well. You know, people might come with novels they've been working on and ideas they've had in the past, but I say just be prepared to have new ideas. So I would get people to play an experiment as often as I can in the class and just try new things, getting random pictures, random words, random places, mixing them all together, just to try to generate that sort of creative side. And then we would maybe work on focusing on the ideas and developing those ideas. But it's really, I think, about play and not necessarily thinking, I want to write a novel today and I'm going to start a novel today. You just don't know where your ideas are going to come from and don't know when the ideas are going to come. It's just being open to as many ideas as possible, I think. So it's, for me at the university, a lot of it is about playfulness and just trying different things, trying a whole range of different exercises without worrying about the outcome.
You've got to become a good editor to write. You know, you've got to be able to edit your work. You've got to be discerning. You've got to read so that you sort of pick up on the patterns in writing. So there are sort of nuts and bolts. So it's,
absolutely,
you know, you go away, you experiment, but you also need the foundations.
Yeah, but I would say to people not to worry about the nuts and bolts of it on day one, because if you start worrying about structure and syntax and adverbs and adjectives before you've even written anything, you probably won't write anything. I'd say to people,
no, that comes slowly. That comes slowly. So through reading other people's work, through sort of reading their work more closely, I think that's how they develop the inner senses to sort of edit their own work.
People to produce material, and then if it's a novel length, or if they want to write a novel, then you start editing it. So do your first draft and then go over and make sure it's tight as it can be.
So that is it for this week's episode then. Massive thank you to Eve and Anthony for coming on, sparing their time, chatting to me about the accidental memoir. If you want to pick up a copy for yourself, or if you think it might be a great present for someone you know, if you've always wanted to hear like a relative's stories, but they're kind of a closed book themselves, then maybe you can give them this book to squeeze out all the nuggets of information that you can. You can find links to buy it over on our website, writersroutine.com. Now, I'm in Edinburgh for the whole of August. I have no interviews in the bag, and I don't know what's happening for the next few weeks of the show. Now, we will be back. This isn't goodbye forever. I just don't know if that'll be in the autumn, a bit later on in the year, or it might be sooner if I get some interviews while I'm up there. I mean, the Edinburgh Fringe must be full of people wanting to chat about something creative. Surely I can call up at least one of them to sit down and chat with me over a microphone. In the meantime, give us a follow on Twitter and Instagram. I'll put out regular clips from all of our chats so far to help with your summer writing. And if you have a few seconds, please leave us a review over on the iTunes podcast store. And I'll see you sometime in the future. Until then, thank you very much for listening, and we'll be back at a point with another writer's routine. Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.